So in this video, I will be talking about the continuing Islamization of Sweden and the rape culture it is producing. Now, I understand that this is a very inflammatory topic, but I do have to encourage people not to post anything that could be misconstrued as some kind of hateful comment, even if it's in jest, because I really think that this subject needs to be discussed, and I think the best way to do that is adhering as closely as possible to the facts and not allowing ourselves to get particularly riled up with what we're going to be covering. And the reason I think this is important is because as soon as you start talking about this and the people who are hate mongers come out of the woodwork, they dominate the conversation. And I don't want this discussion to be dominated by them. They can go to Stormfront, they can go wherever to have that conversation where they want to just hate Muslims. I don't hate Muslims. I'm never going to hate Muslims. So I'm not really interested in hearing it. If you don't like that, then I recommend another channel, because that's never going to be my channel. I'm here to discuss the facts and the conclusions that we can logically draw using them. But I'm not here to simply hate people who have done nothing wrong. And the overwhelming majority of Muslims have done nothing wrong. And really, I can't even blame them for wanting to move out of their shit countries. These individuals probably didn't make their country shit. They're probably fleeing persecution. And our fucking politicians are dumb enough to have basically open border policies and easily accessible welfare states. Of course they're going to come here. You can hardly blame them. You'd do the same in their position. I'm sure that if you're listening to this, you know whether I'm talking to you or not. And if you are one of the people that I'm talking to, let's just not this time, okay? I'm sorry if I sound like a dick, and I'm not trying to be patronizing or anything like that, but I'm simply not prepared to allow my channel to be the sort of place that is actively detrimental to any conversation involving Islam and the West. Again, sorry that I had to give such a long disclaimer, but I really have to emphasize exactly what I can permit with regards to this. Anyway, Sweden's rape statistics are at once incontrovertible and indiscernible to Western journalists. While the hard facts are reported on, they are usually accompanied by vast amounts of apologia. Take, for example, this 2012 BBC piece on the subject. The article begins as follows. The Julian Assange extradition case has put Sweden's relatively high incidence of rape under the spotlight, but can such statistics reliably be compared from one country to another? Which two countries are the kidnapping capitals of the world? Australia and Canada. Official figures from the UN show that there were 17 kidnaps per 100,000 people in Australia in 2010 and 12.7 in Canada. That compares with only 0.6 in Colombia and 1.1 in Mexico. Which is without a doubt fascinating, but what does this have to do with Sweden's skyrocketing rape statistics? The answer is, of course, nothing. Because the author of this BBC article is a rape apologist who feels the need to attempt to play down exactly how bad the gang rape situation in Sweden actually is by comparing it to financially motivated kidnappings. We do eventually reach the actual point of the article, though. Sweden has the highest rape rate in Europe, author Naomi Wolf said on the BBC's Newsnight programme recently. Is it true? Yes. Swedish police recorded the highest number of offences, about 63 per 100,000 inhabitants, of any force in Europe in 2010. The second highest in the world. Congratulations, Sweden. Most rapes reported per 100,000 people in Europe. Second highest in the world, only behind tiny landlocked African nation Lesotho. Well done. In 2011, over 77% of the rapes reported in Sweden were committed by individuals with a foreign background, mostly Muslim, and when this is mentioned by Sweden's politicians, they are punished with fines and socially ostracized for daring to speak about it. Sweden Democrat Michael Hess from Karlskrona was sentenced today to probation and fined for hate speech after having connected the religion of Islam with rape. According to the judgment, the statement was not part of a factual and responsible discussion, and therefore it does not matter whether it's true or not. Of course, there are examples of Muslim men citing cultural differences between Islamic cultures and the West when it comes to rape and consent, such as the following court case in Australia in 2012. An Afghan man who fled from the Taliban to begin a new life in Australia will spend the next 14 years behind bars after a judge rejected his claim that cultural differences had led to him raping a woman. Esmatullah Sharifi, 30, was told by Judge Mark Dean in Melbourne that his background as a traumatised Muslim refugee was no excuse for the rape of a drunken and vulnerable teenager. And that is when these cases go to trial, which they often do not. It's hard to pretend that there is not a serious issue with Islamic attitudes towards women in the West. In Sweden, there is a new gang rape every other week, while in the UK, police have been paralysed with fear at the very idea of arresting Muslim men caught red-handed grooming underage girls. Gang rapes in Sweden are becoming like mass shootings in America. In November 2015, last month, an attack took place at the end of summer, with the Stockholm District Court hearing that the woman had been sitting crying when two teenage boys came and offered her beer and comforted her. She said she had declined the alcohol but ended up sitting with the teenagers at a nearby viewpoint overlooking the city. First, the atmosphere was calm and she even phoned a friend, but then one of the men gripped her neck, ripped her clothes off, and raped her. The woman said that several other boys then arrived and she was raped a further five times by at least four different people. And don't fool yourself to thinking that this isn't exactly as bad as it sounds. In December 2014, this happened. A girl is traumatised after a brutal assault and currently lives in sheltered accommodation. The rapes took place on the 19th of June near Tenster. The men gang-raped the girl while one of them, an unidentified person, put a gun on her face and threatened to kill her if she did not stop screaming. When they had finished raping the girl, the man pressed the gun in her vagina, causing damage and heavy bleeding. Then two of the men drove the girl to a basement room in Rinkeby, where they gang-raped her again. The next day, the girl managed to escape. And it's stuff like that that's the reason that I had to give a 2.5 minute warning at the beginning of this video, because you'd have to be pretty inhuman not to get riled up at that. And I can genuinely understand why people would find it difficult to talk about the subject when you read some of the accounts of it. I really don't blame anyone, but again, I have to make sure that this is a productive discussion. But it's hard to pretend that there isn't a consistent pattern of mistreatment of women in Islam. In Britain, there are over 85 Sharia courts in operation. Adhering to the rulings of these courts is voluntary and they do not supersede English common law. However, when in a Muslim-majority area, it's likely that active social pressure will enforce Quranic law, such as in 2011, when gangs of Muslim men declared areas of London to be Sharia law zones. Dutch academic Machtel Tse gained access to these Sharia courts in London and Birmingham, and wrote a full report. According to Tse's independent study, which was based on sitting in on 15 hours of hearings at the Islamic Sharia Court in Leighton, East London, and Birmingham Central Mosque Sharia, women are treated as second-class citizens during divorce cases. Z insists that these courts are known to frustrate women in their requests for divorce, especially if the husband is unwilling to cooperate. She adds that decisions are based on a toxic mix of religious fundamentalism, culture, and tight-knit communities. And after several investigations, it turns out that mosques in Britain are not particularly moderate at all, especially in areas that are effectively Islamic colonies in Britain. Islam in Britain is dominated by a conservative sect called the Deobandi. The largest single group, the one which arguably gives Islam in Britain much of its character, is the Deobandi. It controls around 45% of Britain's mosques, and nearly all of the UK-based training of Islamic scholars. What most Deobandi scholars have in common is a conservative interpretation of Islamic law. Television and music, for the purpose of entertainment, for example, are frowned upon if not banned, Women are advised not to emerge from their homes any more than is necessary. And Deobandi just happens to be the same branch of Islam that is enforced by the Taliban. There is a good reason why this interpretation of Islam sounds so similar to that of Afghanistan. The Taliban movement grew out of the Deobandi madrasas of Pakistan. It's worth noting that the Deobandi movement is extremely pro-Sharia law, with 99% of Afghans reporting themselves in favour of it. So it should come as no surprise when, in 2013, an adult Muslim man in the UK can simply claim to be unaware that statutory rape of a minor is wrong. And then, for some reason, this will be enough for a British judge to simply let them go. The court heard how Rashid had little experience of women due to his education at an Islamic school in the UK. He told a psychologist that he did not know that having sex with a 13-year-old was against the law, and in other interviews with psychologists, Rashid claimed that he had been taught in his school that women were no more worthy than a lollipop that had been dropped on the ground. This is not a new phenomenon, with The Telegraph reporting as far back as 2007 that hate literature is easily found at UK mosques. Extremist literature that encourages hatred of gays, Christians and Jews can easily be found at many of Britain's mosques, according to a new survey. Researchers for the centre-right think tank Policy Exchange claims it found the literature in a quarter of the 100 mosques and Islamic institutions they visited. Many of the publications allegedly called on British Muslims to segregate themselves from non-Muslims and for unbelievers to be treated as second-class citizens wherever possible. The literature also allegedly contained repeated calls for gays to be thrown from mountains and tall buildings, and for women to be subjugated. These examples of illiberal teachings come from British mosques because, frankly, I couldn't find any information about what's being taught in Swedish mosques. I can only imagine that investigating the attitudes being taught to Muslims in Sweden would be racist. The conclusions we can draw from a large number of British mosques is that young Muslim men are being indoctrinated with deeply regressive attitudes, regarding women in particular. Since I cannot find any information on what is being taught in Swedish mosques, I do not think it's unreasonable to extrapolate that a similar set of teachings is probable, given the sheer volume of sexual crime being done by young Muslim men in Sweden. Women's equality is not an opinion that is held in high regard in the Muslim world. A Pew Research Center survey of over 38,000 Muslims found that over half of the Muslims polled agreed or partially agreed that a wife must always obey her husband. Unsurprisingly, the more westernized the Muslim nation surveyed, the more favorable the respondents were on the subject of women choosing to wear the veil or being allowed to choose to divorce their husbands or equity of inheritance and property rights. Unsurprisingly, individuals who were pro-Sharia law were usually those who were most anti-women's rights. So where do these attitudes originate from? Well, I'm no expert, but it's hard not to suggest that they emanate from the Quran, where it has been long observed that women appear to suffer from not only being considered the property of men, but second-class citizens entirely. The Quran in Surah 4:11 says with regards to inheritance rights, for the male what is equal to a share of two females, or that a woman's testimony is worth half of a man's. If there are not two men available, then a man and two women from those whom you accept as witnesses. So if one of the women errs, the other can remind her. This seems to be backed up in the hadiths, where the Prophet said, isn't the witness of a woman equal to half that of a man? The woman said yes. He said, this is because of the deficiency of a woman's mind. And of course, it's acceptable for Muslim men to practice polygamy. The Quran in Surah 4:3 says, and if you fear that you will not deal justly with the orphan girls, then marry those that please you of other women, 2, 3, or 4. On a personal note, I cannot understand how we in the West are indulging in a willful blindness when it comes to the Islamic mistreatment of women. It's a disgrace. Islam actually treats women the way delusional feminists claim the West treats women. And it seems like there's a conspiracy of silence around the issue. which is probably why Donald Trump is making such a big impression. I don't want to incite hatred with this information. This is not a judgment against individual Muslims or Muslims as a demographic. Each individual must be judged by the content of their character. However, a toxic combination of Western permissiveness through fear of being judged as a racist by one's peers and insular Muslim communities with hardline conservative mosques teaching young Muslim men that women, especially decadent Western women, are of fundamentally lesser value than men, is creating the feminist nightmare in the West. A real rape culture. A culture where it is not unacceptable to rape women, and there may be little to no jail time for Muslim men who have been convicted of the act. It's illiberal, it's anti-egalitarian, it's anti-women's rights, and we have to recognize it as something that needs to be dealt with. We have to learn how to have a rational conversation on the subject of conservative Islam and how these are not compatible values in a Western liberal democracy, and one has to go. And if to have that conversation, we have to cut out all of the knee-jerk reactionaries who want to call you a racist, or all of the actual racists who want to call Muslims sand niggers, then fine. I don't think either one of those groups wants a productive dialogue about Islam in the West, so I'm happy to leave them out of the conversation. But it really is a conversation that is long overdue and is going to have to happen sooner rather than later.